Hello and welcome into this Monday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Mark Congleton here at the mic, your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity for Monday, the second day of November 2020, the day before Election Day. We've made it through a weekend, through Halloween, and tomorrow, possibly an even scarier day. Election Day 2020. How are you today? I hope you're well. Hope your weekend went well. Hope you and yours are doing fine. And that you had a great Halloween. I got to admit, a lot more activity than I thought was going to happen. As I was out and about over the weekend on Saturday, there were quite a few people out trick-or-treating, having a lot of fun. And we didn't see any activity on our neighborhood, on our street. I mean, zero, none, zilch, nada. Well, that's not totally true. There's a guy that lives kind of catty-cornered off behind me. At our place, the road that goes around by our house goes around our house. It goes past one more house and then curves to the right and then doubles back behind us. And there is a house, the house just beyond us. And then there's a house behind that house. And then we own the lot that touches the road as it passes below us. So we have these two lots that stretch down. And that way, when they built the house, they decided, the folks that built the house decided, let's not have any neighbors right up behind us. Let's just have the woods. We can sit out on the deck and enjoy our coffee and just see the trees. And so they bought the lot behind them. And I think that was a wise choice, and we're enjoying that. But that little house, that the house that's not right next door to us, but behind the one next door to us, Friday night they had a Halloween party, or a party of some kind, and they were pumping the music up until around midnight, and did the same thing Halloween night. And they were out there yelling and carrying on and hooping and hollering and having a great time. And my wife and I, who get up really early, it's just a habit we formed years ago. We are early risers. We're laying in the bed listening to the party and going on, hoping our noise machine will drown things out. But no. Oh, gosh. It was just weird. That's really the only activity we had on our street. That was about it. Although, local area churches had trunk or treat things going on, and they were covered up. And I did near where we live there. I did see some folks who had a little table and a pop up tent set up out on their driveway, and they were all in costume, and they were greeting people and who would drive up and stop and get out and bring their kids by to trick or treat, and that was kind of cool, but. There was a great deal more activity than I anticipated happening. And good for America. That's what I say. Good for the U.S. of A. People getting up, getting out, doing what they enjoy, and being wise about it. Good for them. Good for them. And I hope you had a good time over the weekend. I hope that you and yours and the kiddos in your family had a chance to enjoy. I know that a lot of people did because social media was covered up with photographs, just covered up with photographs Saturday night and Sunday of people who had had whose family had theme dress ups. And I think the best one I saw was some folks I know dressed up as the Flintstones, and they had handmade their costumes. They sewed them themselves. They all dressed up as Fred and Wilma and the kids and Pebbles and Bam Bam. And it was a load of fun. That was the best one I saw. In years past, there have been other fun ones too as well. So kudos, congratulations to the United States of America and the people of America who will not succumb to fear, but will be wise. Otherwise, over the weekend, a friend of the family passed away. We went to visitation for that funeral yesterday, then paid a visit with Mom. And she has some guests, and she ran us out of the house. It was time to get dinner going, and she's running us off so she could fix dinner. It was kind of funny. And she apologized later, and I said, hey, it's all right. I've been run out of nicer places. But But all in all, it was a fun weekend. We had a good time. My wife was out of town, and she got up early Saturday morning and headed to Huntsville to be there with our niece, who has recently had, she's been through this battle with cancer, breast cancer. And now she's going through the reconstructive surgery afterwards. And she needed some help with kids and laundry and things like that. Just stuff around the house. And due to the way things have gone with her, she lost her mom years ago, long time ago. And so her aunts, my wife and my wife's sister, are now her moms. And so whenever she hits that point where she just, I really need some help, she calls them or texts them, and they hop in the car and head off to Huntsville. And that's what she did. And that was pretty much our weekend. It was actually a bit busier than normal. I had things that I really wanted to get done around here that I didn't get done because I was solving my computer problems, which I told you a little bit about the other day. I won't go into deep detail. I don't exactly understand why my trusty old MacBook Pro decided to go Tango uniform to assume room temperature, to push up the daisies, to join the choir invisible, to become an ex-laptop. I don't understand why it did that, but it did. And so I went through the process of wiping the hard drive and reinstalling the operating system and kind of getting things up from scratch. And it ran just fine. And then I loaded my backup on it, the most recent backup of everything, so I would have all my material. I've got all the material. It's all backed up. But I loaded the backup, and then it crashed again. So there was something in the backup that crashed. So fortunately, I live in the Apple universe. And thanks to iCloud, I was able to retrieve most everything, with the exception of just a handful of little programs that I use, little apps that I use that aren't in the Apple Store, in the App Store. And then I had to go get those again and dig up the passwords, you know, the keys for them and all that, and get them reinstalled. But everything is back up to the way it was before. Actually, I'm looking at it right now. The recorder is recording, the playback unit is playbacking, and the Facebook link is Facebooking. And hang on, let me go over there and click this so it transitions. And see, there's the flag. So that's all back up to snuff again. Everything seems to be fine. Although I did order another hard drive, a replacement for the one that's on board now, because I'm not sure why it's flaking out. I just am not sure. And I just decided, you know, let's just replace that SSD. It's been in there. How long has it been in there? It's been in there for like 5 years or so. So let's replace the SSD just to be sure. I've got everything backed up. Why not? So anyway, so much for Nerdville. That was it. And that was pretty much the weekend. That's pretty much it. It's good to be back in the saddle again on a Monday. Right now it's a bit after 8 a.m. Central Time. We've gone through a time change, which it's a treat to get up in the morning and it not be dark. I love that. I hate it getting dark so early. I hate that. I really wish we could stay on daylight saving time all year long. I think that would be awesome. Just pick a time, stick to it, instead of this flip-flopping around. We need to do that. Somebody make that happen, would you? Well, over the weekend, some crazy stuff is happening because we're in the run-up to Election Day tomorrow. And, of course, the panic attacks are setting in on the left. People are freaking out. And when people on the left freak out, they point fingers at others and screech. You know that scene from Invasion of the Body Snatchers, Donald Sutherland, his mouth hanging open and that screech as he points at the guy. And that's what's happening now, is the left is pointing fingers and screeching about all manner of things, which are just nothing compared to what the left has done. For example, in Texas over the weekend, I know you saw this, the Trump train incident, dozens of supporters of President Trump driving pickup trucks in Texas, and they decided to give the Biden campaign bus an escort, which is exactly what was going on. They drove around all sides of it. They gathered around it, and they just gave it an escort. Just sort of a show of force. Hey, you're in Texas. This is Trump country. And of course, the twist on the story is that they were interfering, that they were harassing, that they were making it a dangerous situation. And it was really no more dangerous than just driving in regular traffic on the highway until a little white crossover SUV decided to start playing bumper cars with a big 4x4 pickup truck. And if you go watch the video and you watch it carefully, you will see that the driver of the Biden-Harris campaign bus decided to do some lane splitting, which is driving along the divider line, the, you know, the little dotted, the dashed lines that divide the highway. He put two wheels of the bus on one side and two wheels of the bus on the other side and occupied the middle of two lanes in an attempt to force the vehicles on either side of him further out. And that kind of makes sense. I kind of get that. He's got a bunch of people screaming and getting nervous and having a hissy fit on board. He's going to try to, he's got all the room. I mean, I get that. But the little white SUV / crossover did the same thing and started crowding that big 4x4 pickup truck, big jacked up lifted 4x4 truck with giant wheels and tires, and crowded it over. And it was in the 4x4's lane. And it was giving the 4x4, it was getting dangerously close to the 4x4. And apparently there was an exchange. There must have been an exchange of some kind. And the guy in the 4x4 said, okay, you've had your fun. And he tweaked his steering wheel to the left and pushed the little white car away. And the little white car now has big black tire marks on the side of it where it decided to tangle with something much larger than itself. That really was the only incident, the only problem. Well, now the FBI is looking into this incident on Friday, in which a group of Trump supporters driving trucks and waving Trump flags surrounded and followed a Biden campaign bus as it drove up I-35 in Hayes County. The incident, caught on video, posted across social media, which is, you've seen it, you know you have, it prompted the Biden campaign to say they were canceling an event in the state. The Washington Post, a reliably leftist newspaper, reported that Biden campaign staffers called 911 to get a police escort to their next location. Texas House Representative Cheryl Cole, the Democrat, wrote on Twitter that, quote, unfortunately, pro-Trump protesters have escalated well beyond safe limits. Sorry to all who looked forward to this fun event. In another report, CNN said a Biden campaign official described the incident as an attempt to slow down the bus and run it off the road. Now, if you've watched the video, and there's more than one angle on this video, there's more. If you've watched them, you know that's not what was going on. They were just out there happily harassing the Biden bus. They really weren't doing anything dangerous, as I've already said. They were just out there showing the people on the Biden bus they were in Trump country. According to a source familiar with the incident, the report says, the vehicles were a Trump train group. These groups are known in parts of the state and organize events that involve their cars with flags and Trump paraphernalia and drive around to show their support for President Trump. At one point, they slowed the tour bus to roughly 20 miles an hour on I-35. They slowed down to try to stop the bus in the middle of the highway. You know, that may well have happened. But at least they weren't standing out on an interstate highway, blocking traffic, and then breaking windows and beating on vehicles and denting them and dragging people out of them, which is what's happened in Democrat cities. So the Trump drivers were all, I actually, rather peaceful, unlike Biden supporters. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast. Good to have you along. Thanks for being there. Subscribers, thanks for subscribing. I appreciate you listening. subscribing, sharing with your friends. You're not a subscriber? Join the fun. Give it a couple of weeks. See what you think. It's every day, coming direct to your listening device. All you have to do is go to dailyperspectivepodcast.com and look for your links. Actually, you don't have to go there. You can go to any place you will find finer podcasts and just search for Daily Perspective Podcast. You'll find it. Okay? All right. Someone who needs to listen is clearly Lady Gaga. If she listened, she would understand that what she pulled over the weekend was just stupid. Did you see? Of course you've seen it. You're smart. You're savvy. You're up on the news. You've seen the video with Lady Gaga dressed in camo and those ridiculously tall black and pink combat boots, sipping a beer, saying she's voting for Joe Biden because she thinks that's what middle America looks like. This is someone born and raised in Manhattan. New York City? Yes, she was born and raised in Manhattan. She knows nothing about middle America except what she has seen from the windows of her tour bus. That's all she knows. She doesn't know anything about the people of this country. What she knows about is her music. What she knows about is being on stage and performing. That's what Lady Gaga knows about. She doesn't know you. She doesn't know anything about you. She doesn't know anything at all about real Americans or America itself. She has this bizarre, twisted worldview that comes out in this video.
Hey, this is Lady Gaga. I'm voting for America, which means I'm voting for Joe Biden. And if you live in Minnesota, Pennsylvania, Georgia, Michigan, Florida, or Arizona, I encourage you to vote. And if you have a friend that lives there, tell them to vote. I'm going to be in one of these states tomorrow. Guess which one I'll be in? Hint, I used to live there. Cheers to the 2020 election.
Frankly, Lady Gaga, none of us actually care where you're going to be, and we don't care how you're going to vote. And here's why. Because you are a clueless celebrity who knows what you're told. You don't have a real experience of life in America. You have a leftist perspective provided to you by your bubble. That's what you have. And America knows what's good for it. Which is what really, really chaps the backsides of politicians in Washington, D.C. They're learning that most Americans actually are capable of living their own lives and don't need nannies. So, Lady Gaga, go about your business, shut up, and sing. Well, on Tuesday, tomorrow, Election Day, the people of San Francisco will decide whether the city should tax companies for paying their CEOs too much money. This is a familiar chant coming from the left, that CEOs are obscenely rich and should never be paid so much money. Progressive lawmaker Matt Haney introduced the overpaid executive tax to the San Francisco Board of Supervisors in June to better protect the city's healthcare system from the COVID-19 threat. His colleagues unanimously agreed to put his idea before voters on the November ballot, listed as Proposition L. That's for lame. The measure requires a simple majority for passage. Haney tweeted out in August, "Billionaires added hundreds of billions of dollars to their wealth during a pandemic." And he calls the current tax system backwards, brutal, and immoral. Well, it is in some ways, but not in the way you say, sir. He continues, "I authored Proposition L, the overpaid executive tax, to put a surcharge on these companies who pay their top executives millions in salaries while underpaying their workers. This will allow us to hire hundreds of healthcare workers, nurses, doctors, and emergency responders." Haney said most small businesses would be exempt. To qualify for the proposed tax, businesses must generate at least $1.17 million in gross receipts annually. According to the San Francisco Chronicle, the measure would tax those earnings under the following criteria: companies subject to the tax would have to pay 0.1% of their gross receipts earned in San Francisco to the city if their highest paid employee makes 100 times the median salary of the company's San Francisco-based workforce. The figure goes up to 0.2% for executives making 200 times the company's median salary for local workers, and upwards of 1% of gross receipts when top brass makes 1,000 times the median. I'll get back to this. Haney insists the extra revenue is needed to cover the city's annual budget deficit, which he said is projected to be more than $2 billion over the next two fiscal years. If approved, officials estimate the new policy could raise between $60 million and $140 million additional annual revenue dollars for the city's general fund. Haney has emphasized the massive wealth in the city and in the country, saying it should be shared. Clearly, he is a leftist, a progressive. He's a Marxist who believes that the billionaires' wealth should be taken from them and shared among the people. Now, here's the problem with his proposition. He doesn't understand how money works. When this passes, not if, because the clueless people of San Francisco who keep voting these clowns into office, they will approve this. Because fairness, that's why. Fairness! They'll vote it in, and these companies based in San Francisco will look at their books and realize, you know what? San Francisco doesn't appreciate what we're doing for them. They're playing favoritism. They're being childish. They're saying it's not fair, and we'll show them fairness. We'll move our headquarters. And so they will headquarter elsewhere, as many businesses in California are currently doing. They're packing up and leaving. It's the answer that makes the most sense when you know how money works. You don't put it in the hands of idiot politicians who spend it unwisely. You keep it in the company to reinvest and the like. Now, as for a CEO making 100 times as much as one of the people, one of the workers, the CEO is responsible for the entirety of the company. The CEO is responsible for making decisions which affect the entirety of the company, including all of those employees. The CEO determines the course the company will take and is responsible for the company growing to make more money, to employ more people. The CEO has a certain talent, has a certain ability, has a certain edge that the general worker in the company does not have. He can do a job they can't. And odds are he can learn to do their jobs. And we've seen that example played out time and time and time again as bosses go undercover and work on the line. They learn how people work. They learn the jobs. They do the jobs well. But the people working, the rank and file, the ones who are crying, "It's not fair," those people can't do what the CEO does and would crumble under the pressure the CEO has, because he's responsible for all of those workers, for their families, for the food on their tables, for the insurance that covers their medical needs. That guy, he's the one that's responsible for keeping them employed, if at all possible. And in a bad economy, that job gets harder and harder when you've got clueless idiot politicians dictating socialist policies, which are anti-business. That job gets harder. So him being paid that much more is really, when you look at the factors involved, it's not really that unfair at all. He's working at a level that the others can't. and he's rewarded richly for being able to work at that level. You may think it's obscene to make billions of dollars and to live that way, but you don't get there by being some schlub who fusses at other people for making more money than you. That's not how life works. You get there by having a unique talent set and applying that unique talent set in such a way that profits everyone. It benefits everyone and helps everyone have opportunities to grow and succeed. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast for Monday, the second day of November 2020, the day before Election Day. Can I give you a little encouragement for the next 48 hours or so? Let me encourage you to not follow the TV news channels. Don't do it. You're going to get depressed. You're going to get angry. What you need is real information. So turn off the TVs. They're all never Trumpers for the most part. They're just going to stress you out with their endless drama. And I'm including Fox News in this as well, okay? Because more and more and more we're learning that on the inside, Fox News has made a transition. It is not what it once was, which was the place that really truthfully did try to report and let you decide. Now, there are so many progressives, so many liberals involved at Fox News that the only time you can be sure you're getting a more clear perspective on things is early mornings and in prime time in the evenings. That's really it. The rest of the news shows, you're getting weirdness. You really are. In fact, we learned over the weekend that the person responsible for their election night polling results is a registered Democrat and a Biden supporter who voted for Hillary Clinton. So trusting Fox News is not possible anymore. So don't watch them. I would go to Twitter and follow a handful of people. Here's four of them you can follow right now. There's Larry Schweikert, Tracy Beans, The People's Pundit, and Big Data Poll. That's four places you can go. If you're not following them now, then follow them and see what they do over the next 24 hours, and you'll see what I'm talking about. Instead of being frustrated and angry, get some more realistic views, because you can't trust the polling and you can't trust the reporting on the news channels. They're not going to tell you the truth. They're just not. So seek out other sources of information. Now, those four sources I just gave you, that's not 100% of where I get my stuff. That's just a small percentage of where I get what I look at. I look at all kinds of stuff all the time. I've said this so many times, and I'll just say it this time again, and that is that I am a news and info junkie, and I look at all kinds of information, and I stay happy and angry almost all the time because I'm looking at all kinds of things. So I just find your sources, get some real news, okay? Now, there's an article coming from over at PJ Media by Matt Margolis, and I want to pass that along to you, and I'll comment along the way. It's the latest poll out of Iowa foreshadows disaster for Biden. And he starts off by saying, yeah, polls shouldn't be trusted. But hear me out. Never-Trumper Bill Kristol recalled the significance of the last Des Moines Register poll in a Friday tweet prior to the poll's release. He says, I remember well my phone conversation with a smart Republican friend, sadly pro-Trump, Saturday evening, November 5th, 2016, after the final DMR poll of Iowa at Trump plus 7. He said, if Iowa is plus 7, then Trump has a good shot at Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, and could win the whole thing. I was worried. He was right. Trump ultimately won Iowa in 2016 by 9.4 points. Not long after Kristol's tweet, the final Des Moines Register poll was released, showed a massive shift to Trump in Iowa, putting him again at plus 7 over Biden. Republican President Donald Trump has taken over the lead in Iowa, they say. As Democratic former President, Vice President Joe Biden has faded. A new Des Moines Register MediaCom Iowa poll shows just days before Election Day. The president now leads by 7 percentage points over Biden, 48-41%. 3% say they'll vote for someone else, 2% aren't sure, and 5% don't want to say who they'll vote for. Just as a side note, that 5%, they're Trump voters. The article goes on to say in September's Iowa poll, the candidates were tied 47-47. J. Ann Seltzer, the president of Seltzer & Company, which conducted that poll, said that the gender gap has narrowed. Independents have flooded back to the president. Quote, the president is holding demographic groups that he won in Iowa 4 years ago, and that would give someone a certain level of comfort with their standing. There's a consistent story in 2020 to what happened in 2016. Now, Bill Kristol, who had previously noted the implications of the final Des Moines Register poll, seemed quick to backtrack on its significance, though, rather than outright concede that the polls suggest Trump is viable, despite the polls, in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. Trump won those states in 2016 as well. Okay, Bill. Look, I get that people tend to see what they want to see in polling, but J. Ann Seltzer's reputation for polling in Iowa is solid. And Kristol seems unwilling to acknowledge that perhaps there's been a late-breaking shift in Trump's favor. He says, in addition to fading with independents, Biden's lost ground with women. In September, he held a 20-point lead among women, which balanced out Trump's 21-point lead among men. But today, Biden's lead with women has shrunk to 9 percentage points, 50%-41%. He said, or Seltzer said, we saw a huge gender gap that benefited Biden in September, and while there's still a big gap among men, they're going for Trump by a 24-point margin. It's just a 9-point margin for Biden with women, and so there's just an imbalance there. Before, we saw mirror images of each other. If this shift has happened in Iowa, does Bill Kristol really believe it hasn't also happened in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin as well? He certainly would have argued that the DMR poll spelled doom for Trump in those states if it showed him behind. Bill Kristol seems to be in denial that recent battleground state polls have been showing momentum for Trump. Republican Senator Joni Ernst also saw a boost in the DMR poll. She's now ahead of her challenger, 46-42%. So the polls are shifting. And I would say this, what I've said to you all along, is that political polling is not used for reflecting opinion. It's used to shape opinion. Given that, if the polls are now showing Trump rebounding strongly, imagine how it is in the real world. If the polls can't deny the shift, the change, the growth, imagine what's really going on. Here's another indicator. President Trump just got a critical endorsement from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette in Pennsylvania, an important swing state. This is the first time the paper has endorsed a Republican for president since 1972. The editors of the paper tweeted, "This newspaper has not supported a Republican for president since 1972, but we believe President Trump, for all his faults, is a better choice this year." It's a big deal. Pittsburgh has traditionally been a Democrat stronghold. And as the endorsement said, the first time since 72 the paper has endorsed a Republican. First, the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette did not hesitate in pointing out what they perceive as President Trump's faults. Here's what they said. "We share the embarrassment of millions of Americans who are disturbed by the president's unpresidential manners and character, his rudeness and put-downs and bragging and bending of the truth. None of this can be justified. The president's behavior often has diminished his presidency and the president, his presidency and the presidency. Most Americans want a president who makes them proud." Let me just step aside here and say, this is not true. Yes, people do want to be proud of their president, but most Americans prefer a president who makes them comfortable. And that's the problem with these people at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. They're uncomfortable with how President Trump is, because President Trump's not a politician. He's a businessman. A businessman who's had to deal with the thugs in the business world and others in New Jersey and New York and other places. As I've said before, he's dealt with the scum in order to become successful. So he looked at Washington, D.C. and said, these guys are amateurs. They go on to say, we too prefer the first-class temperament and demeanor of a Winston Churchill, a Dwight Eisenhower, a Franklin Roosevelt, a Ronald Reagan, or a Barack Obama, whom this newspaper enthusiastically supported in 2008 and 2012. None of them are on the ballot this year. The same paper that enthusiastically supported Barack Obama is now supporting President Trump. That is a very big deal. The Post-Gazette then went on to detail some of President Trump's many accomplishments and ended the list with the item most near and dear to those who work and live in the Pittsburgh region, saying, finally, let's talk about one of the most important concerns in this region, energy. Under Mr. Trump, the United States achieved energy independence for the first time in the lifetimes of most of us. Where would Western Pennsylvania be without the Shell petrochemical complex? The petrochemical industry is hugely important to the economies in Pennsylvania, Ohio, and other states. And Biden-Harris's statements about the industry are unsettling to many who live and work in these regions. The Post-Gazette then explained why they can't support Biden and Harris, even though they were a fan of Barack Obama. They said, the Biden-Harris ticket offers us higher taxes and a nanny state that will bow to the bullies and the woke, who would tear down history rather than learning from history and building up the country. It offers an end to fracking and to other cuckoo California dreams that will cost the economy and the people who most need work right now. Good-paying, green jobs are probably not jobs for Pittsburgh or Cleveland or Toledo or Youngstown. It offers softness on China, which Mr. Trump understands is our enemy. Mr. Biden is too old for the job and fragile. There's a very real chance he will not make it through the term. Mr. Trump is also too old, but seemingly robust. But in Mike Pence, Mr. Trump has a vice president ready to take over, if need be. He is a safe pair of hands. Senator Kamala Harris gives no evidence of being ready to be president. Let's hope voters in Pennsylvania and other places heed their important words. No, President Trump is not perfect, but he is the best choice, the best leader for the moment. He's not a leader for people who want to be comfortable. He's a leader for people who want to succeed. And he's demonstrated that ability again and again and again. And now, in the hours before Election Day, more and more are finding themselves having to cope with the reality of the situation rather than the fantasy being presented by the Democrats. And that reality is in the hands of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. This country will crumble because neither one of them is fit to occupy the Oval Office. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast, Monday, November 2nd. Almost said first. November 2nd, 2020. During the break. No, I wasn't scanning local social media or local media or any other kind of media. I was checking charge levels on batteries and things like that. I'm going to be taking the drone out today. At least that's the plan. The pooch doesn't know it yet, but she's going to get to go out for a little excursion as well, which will make her very happy. I have some errands to run today in between this and that, and I'm going to take the drone and hopefully get it up in the air and fly a bit. Really been wanting to. I've been watching videos of YouTubers who use drones in their YouTube video production, and I gotta be honest, I miss flying, so I need to get out there and do some today. If you fly, you understand. Especially if you have a product like DJI's products that have goggles and the like, you can strap on and it feels like you're on board the drone, so you get to watch the world go by from 400 feet in the air. It's kind of nice. But that hopefully will be part of things today. Where are we? Let's see. We've done the poll. We've done the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. And that brings us back around to the coronavirus. One of the campaign things that Joe Biden keeps emphasizing, and Kamala Harris, and every Democrat. By the way, if you do a little looking around, you will see that the Democrats have a playbook and they have talking points, and they are they're all saying the same thing. And they are talking about the coronavirus and blaming President Trump for 200,000 people passing away. And I think it's important for us to look at a couple of things really quickly. And I'm scrambling right now. I'm trying to find something because I posted this earlier, and now it occurs to me, wow, I need that stat right now. So let me scroll back through posts here. And let's take a look at really quickly. Let's take a look at fatality ranges or at fatality rates, and let's break it out by age. This is all about COVID. Okay. From 0 to 19 years, the fatality rate is 0.00003. That's 0.03%. 0.03%, I should say. Between 20 and 49 years, the fatality rate is 0.0002. That's 0.0001%. Between 50 and 69 years, 0.005. That's 0.005%. And 70 plus years, 0.054%. That is still extremely low. Even for the elderly, there's a very small chance of death. Citing the total death count, this is what the Democrats, the politicians, keep doing, and their comrades in the news media. They talk about 220,000 plus people have died of coronavirus. Well, still, the death rate for coronavirus compared to other things is still not what it shouldn't. It shouldn't be as frightening as they're making it. That's what I'm saying. And the key player that you see on the news all the time is Dr. Anthony Fauci. He is one of the leading members of the White House Coronavirus Task Force. And now, in the few days leading up to the election itself, he has gone from being a, quote, scientific advisor, end quote, to a political pundit. He has bashed President Donald Trump's response to COVID-19 in a new interview, and praised Joe Biden's campaign. This is the same man who just a few weeks ago was saying that Trump had done everything that was suggested. They had no disagreements. They had no issues about what was done and the national perspective on things. This same man was saying those things just a few weeks ago, but now he is bashing this administration's response to COVID-19 and praising the campaign of the Democrat presidential candidate. speaking with the Washington Post, a hard left-leaning newspaper. Dr. Fauci said the United States is, quote, in for a whole lot of hurt, end quote, as winter begins because of the White House's current COVID response. He said this, it's not a good situation. All the stars are aligned in the wrong place as you go into the fall and winter season. With people congregating at home indoors, you could not possibly be positioned more poorly. End quote. Fauci, the nation's top infectious disease expert, said an abrupt change needs to be made in public health practices and behaviors. This is according to the reporting from the Washington Post. On the other hand, Fauci praised Biden and Kamala Harris for taking it seriously, explaining Trump is more concerned about the economy and keeping the country open. Here's what the Post said. By contrast, former Vice President Joe Biden and Senator Kamala D. Harris have consistently worn masks in public and have held socially distanced events. When two people around Harris tested positive for the coronavirus in October, she canceled travel for several days. Asked about the difference between their approaches, Fauci said Biden's campaign, quote, is taking it seriously from a public health perspective. Trump, says Fauci, is looking at it from a different perspective. He said that perspective was the economy and reopening the country. Well, the White House responded. White House spokesman Judd Deere blasted Fauci, accusing the doctor of playing politics just days before Election Day. Quote, it's unacceptable and breaking with all norms for Dr. Fauci, a senior member of the president's coronavirus task force and someone who has praised President Trump's actions throughout this pandemic, to choose 3 days before an election to play politics. As a member of the task force, Dr. Fauci has a duty to express concerns or push for a change in strategy. But he's not done that. Instead, choosing to criticize the president in the media and make his political leanings known by praising the president's opponent. Now, Dr. Scott Atlas, a radiologist who was tapped by Trump to serve as an advisor to the White House Coronavirus Task Force, also responded to Fauci on Twitter, saying Fauci is embarrassing himself. In his interview with the Post, Fauci personally attacked Atlas. He said, I have real problems with that guy. He's a smart guy who's talking about things that I believe he doesn't have any real insight or knowledge or experience in. He keeps talking about things that when you dissect it out and parse it out, it doesn't make any sense. Well, I've said this before, and let me just repeat it. Dr. Fauci is a worst case scenario guy. He's an analyst. He is someone who looks at infectious diseases and how a scenario will play out given certain circumstances. And that's necessary. I've said this before. That's necessary. You have to have that guy on your team. You do. You have to have the guy who will give you the worst case scenario. You have to have the guy who will say, well, if you don't do this and you don't do that, this is what will happen. You have to have that guy. If you ignore that guy, you're fooling yourself. And sadly, I think you're a fool if you don't have that guy on your team. But that guy is one member of your team. He is not all of your team. He is one person who gives one perspective, which you must weigh when considering the rest of the perspectives as well. And since the news media loves that worst case scenario, because it is the sexiest one, it is the one that can be played with the most sensationalism. The news media loves Dr. Fauci. That's why you see him on the news all the time. They love that worst case scenario perspective because that's what they've been fanning the flames of for all this time. That's why they keep talking about the fatality numbers. That's why they keep talking about new cases and not putting the new cases in perspective. And that perspective is we do a lot more thorough testing than other countries do. so our numbers are higher. They love Dr. Fauci because he is that guy. He is Dr. Doom and Gloom. But he's only one part of the equation. He's only one aspect that has to be considered. His information is valuable, but it's not the end. He is like someone saying no one should drive because too many people are dying on the road, when we have current traffic fatality percentages. It doesn't make sense in the real world. In the big picture, his advice does need to be heeded, but it's not the end. But this is the end of today's podcast. God bless you. Thanks for joining in the fun. We'll be back tomorrow for the Election Day edition of the Daily Perspective podcast. Join us then. God bless. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.